Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. It is the 21st day of July, 2015. This program is live. Well, you know, right now it is. Right now being 8 minutes past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And we're a little late to the microphone. I am a little late to the microphone on account of another thunderstorm of this year monsoon season passing by. This one forced to shut down and reboot. And, you know, what a delight those are, right at airtime. Whee! Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. If you'd like to, you can jump into The Horn chat room. I mean, I can't, but you can. Good evening to everyone in the chat room, whomever you may be. Thank you, Sparky. You're live now. Thanks for letting me know. I do appreciate it. There's no guarantee. Just not. But we are. We're live. And this is Titanic Tuesday, isn't it? Yes, it is. And just, the usual, going through, like I said, chat room, jump in, pick a screen name, password, have a blast, that kind of thing. And, of course, we try to raise $200 an evening. And actually, the last of the challenges were met after the program ended last night. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. So, we begin the evening just trying to raise $200. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250. You get the idea. Yeah. And again, thanks very much to our buddy Thomas Chug a Punch. I am busily reading Between the World and Me, and it is proving to be an amazing memoir. As far as I can tell, I highly recommend it. And I just... thank you very kindly, Jeremy, noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Much obliged. I can say for sure that, when I connected with Dr. Bill right before his program this evening, I suggested that this was reading that he wanted to do, needed to do, should do, ought. If you're anybody except one of those people who says, well, I don't even believe in white privilege. I'm white and I ain't got no privilege. If you're anybody, you would do well to read this book. Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me. I don't know, maybe we could try to get him on the program and have a little broader discussion. Because it would seem, based on what I've read so far, and after the epic, shall we call it that, dare we call it that, takedown of David Brooks from Moran Monday, it would seem that Herr Brooks missed the entire point of the book. And you know, not one of those little missed it by that much kind of, I mean, by a freaking mile. he missed the point of the book. Yeah, read it for yourself and then go back and read his column and see if you agree. Now, let's see. Question coming in from Ron and Raleigh. I have a question. See, that's how I knew. It was in the subject line. Just before jetting off to Israel to kiss Bibi Netanyahu's ass concerning the Iran nuke deal, Ashton Carter stated that Israel was our staunchest ally. Ron says, my question is, how does this staunchness manifest itself? The U.S. has engaged in many conflicts since 1948 when Israel was given Palestine, and I don't recall them ever putting one boot on the ground on our behalf. Did I miss something? Concerning the deal with Iran, why does the for-profit media and our politicians speak with such certainty about Iran's desire to build a nuclear weapon? Iran stated when they started their program that they wanted to use nuclear power to make electricity so they could sell their oil for hard currency to buy goods. Their leaders have stated again and again and again that nuclear weapons are un-Islamic. Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, whereas our staunchest ally won't even admit to having any nukes. Israel's been saying since 1981 that Iran is only 5 years from having a nuke. I haven't seen any. Our staunch ally doesn't seem to have any problem killing American citizens, whereas Iran has killed exactly zero Americans. We, on the other hand, have killed scores of Iranians, yet we act as though we have grounds for a grievance against them. Israel is a rogue nation that bombs its neighbors with impunity. Why do we condone this behavior? What have they ever done for us? Nothing! Not a blessed thing. Unless, of course, you want to say that they provide some sort of a beachhead for democracy in the Levant. Yeah. But since you bring it up, and I laughed. Agnes shared this story with me the other day. So the Israelis are crying great big crocodile tears, right, about the Iran deal. But guess what? It's not as simple as all that. No. Not at all. If you're a parent and you've got more than one kid, and it seems to be especially prevalent among parents of like two kids or three tops. You know, if you've got the Waltons, it's a different story altogether. But if you've got one or two kids, and one of them has a birthday, and you get and granted, both kids always get the birthday cake and all of that stuff. But it's one kid's birthday, and they get a birthday cake. You know, you go and you get a little something for the other kid, just so they won't feel completely left out. I mean, we went through that that sort of thing. You know, bring something home for one, you got to bring something home for all. It's the chewing gum rule from fourth grade. You have enough for everybody? When I was a smart-ass little kid, I always made sure I did. Didn't work, though. We still didn't all get to sit there chomping gum. Yeah. Anyway, so it's one kid's birthday, and they get the cake and you know, the shenanigans, party, whatever, but there's always something, a little something for the kid whose birthday it isn't. And it flip-flops when it's the other kid's birthday. I don't need any emails about spoiling children or being indulgent. But we've got that in a really great, I mean, we've got a really great big example of that in the Iran nuclear agreement. You know, it's even being called a deal, and I don't know that it's a deal. We're letting Iran have some money back that was theirs to begin with. Oh! So we stopped stealing their money. Well, we took it from them, and then we said, you can't have it. And then they made an agreement. We're going to say, okay, you can have your money back. Damn if that doesn't sound a little bit like extortion. Oh, but never mind. Let's not get lost in the fine details. So we're having an agreement, and my, isn't the Congress looking silly? They've been outmaneuvered seven different ways from Sunday. Because, among other things, I don't know if you noticed, but yesterday the U.N. Security Council passed muster on the Iran agreement and said, yeah, we like it, we approve. So that just leaves the Republican Congress to pitch a hissy and throw a fit, which they'll do because, you know, Republicans. But if they say no, what does that mean? The rest of the world's going to not go through with the agreement? Iran's going to back out? No, they'll just make us look stupid. But never mind that part. Here's the fun part. You know why Ash Carter is going over to Israel? Well, he's taking the little present for Israel because we paid some attention to Iran. And Israel would throw a tantrum, and they've been throwing a tantrum, because tantrums are what Israel does best. The New York Times reporting, when President Obama called Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday to discuss the nuclear, see, they call it that, to deal with Iran, you'd think a highfalutin newspaper like the New York Times could use the word agreement. The American president offered the Israeli leader, well, okay, I see how this is going to go. Obama's just a president, but by God, Netanyahu's a leader! Who had just deemed the agreement a historic mistake, a consolation prize. Even the New York Times calls it that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the little present that we're taking over to Israel, at least $1.5 billion more dollars. Mm-hmm. $1.5 billion more taxpayer dollars. $1.5 billion more dollars that could go to insure actual Americans against disease and provide health care or fix a road or build a school or any number of things. But no, we're giving $1.5 billion more dollars to Israel because Israel stomped its little feet and banged its little heels on the floor and held their breath until they turned blue. And so, you know, you give the tantrum child a lolly and hope they'll settle down. Yeah. But yeah, we're gonna give them some more money. That conversation may begin as soon as next week, which is this week, which is now, when the Defense Secretary, Ashton Carter, is planning to travel to Israel and meet with Israeli leaders, again with the leaders. The Iran deal is likely to feature prominently in the discussions, defense officials said, but it remains unclear what, if anything, he might offer the Israelis. I mean, you know, there's always money. And they will not turn down the money. Ultimately, they'll do, oh, we don't want the money. Oh, God, look at that. Look at that money. We don't want it. We don't want the money. Hey, look, a squirrel. Where'd the money go? It just gets a little embarrassing after a while, doesn't it? At least for me. So that in response to Ron's note. But that's not the sum and substance and be-all and end-all of the program this evening by any stretch of the imagination. No. No, it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And Titanic Tuesday, you may recall, is named for our weekly celebration of the Titanic intellect that is always to be found in the American right-wing Republicans. You know, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger-eaters, birchers, baggers, libertarians, what have you. Mm-hmm. The name, of course, you may recall, also comes from something that our buddy Jim heard once upon a time. When one of the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing the people, right-wingers, called in to the little bitty radio station not too awfully far from here to ask their right-wing mentor, Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean. To which, with monumental confidence, our master of monotone replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. And we have celebrated that day from then until this. Still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic trifle bowl. So we have real live, honest to goodness, right wing stupid to celebrate this evening. Just mind boggling right wing idiocy. And it might be a good time to remind folks that a right winger does not always have to be an American right winger because of our first nominee here. Because our first nominee here would be not an American. Our first nominee being the husband of the coin, Prince Philip. I mean, you know, the Republicans. Well, I remember when Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, was making fun of Joe Biden as Joe Biden sat in grief over the death of his beloved son. And this was just 2 or 3 weeks ago, a month ago maybe. But when it comes to, and you know, for them to make fun of Joe Biden really shows the minuscule degree to which they have any kind of a historical recollection, because any time that Joe Biden has said something even remotely odd, you know, there's always, ketchup is a vegetable, out of Ronnie Reagan, or that wonderful day when Dan Quayle corrected a school child by explaining that potato had an E on the end, you know, P-O-T-A-T-O-E, potato, right? Yeah. Or the time that Dan Quayle said that he was going to Latin America and that made him wish all the more that he had studied Latin. It was not a joke. But anyway, as is often the case, we really struggle to keep up with the mother country, to wit, merry oldie England. In this case, the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip. It was this past Thursday when he was talking to some community workers, maybe in this country we'd call them community organizers, and then the right wing would make fun of them and accuse them of being friends, palling around with terrorists perhaps, or having attended a religious service with where the Reverend Jeremiah Wright preached a sermon. You know, right, the usual. But no, these are merely referred to as female community workers in East London. Prince Philip and the coin were going to the opening of the Chadwell Health Community Center in Dagenham, because that's their job. One of the richest families on earth has the only job they have is to try to go around and cut ribbons and not be a complete embarrassment to the people to who swear their allegiance to them. And in the course of the coin visiting the Chadwell Health Community Center in Dagenham, the folks there, because they like their coin, presented her with a sponge cake. Because, you know, it's nice. At which point, the prince looked at the women assembled and said, "So, who do you sponge off of, eh?" "No, really." "Well, actually, he's rather upper crust, so he didn't leave the of dangling at the end there. That's something up with which he will not put. But he said, who do you sponge off?" Oh, God, don't you love the 1%? Aren't they delightful?
You dick!
That's what I thought, Dr. Spicoli. And then, as the women assembled, looked shocked back at him, and, I don't know, maybe sniffled back a tear or something, or maybe became furious, he went on. And also asked the women, "Do you meet to have a gossip?"
"How thoughtful."
Yeah, no wonder they cut the heads off royals. God almighty. Oh, but they love their monarchy. And they keep breeding. Beautiful, ain't it? But we don't often have an opportunity to include the royalty that this nation is so utterly fascinated by in Moran Monday or Titanic Tuesday. So I thought it was only proper. Of course, he's 94 years old, and so of course perhaps in another time, you know. It was quite all right to look at the little people and say, "How do you sponge off?" You know, back when they were peasants. "Oh, piss boy, bring me the bucket." It was only a couple of weeks ago when he looked at a photographer and said, "Just take the fucking picture." 94 won't last forever. Ron and Raleigh, noting the Duke's job. "Hey, Bob, Prince Philip is a git." Okay, we'll take that as read. Jim noting, said Duke of Earl Asshole has always been a prick and a philanderer. Well, it's nice to see he's still honing his craft at 94. You'd think they could have said, well, but no, you don't. Really? Just retire and turn... Now, I mean, the English crown ain't like the papacy. It's not like you can just retire and let the next guy step up. Oh, you'll wear it for life. Now, and, well, we all know who the peasants sponge off of. It's me, isn't it? And entirely true, Marty noting. So, the royal consort said aloud what the Tory PM and his cabinet say amongst themselves in number 10 Downing Street. They're sponging off of us. And, of course, they probably do think... And that's why austerity. Because, by God, the 1% are tired of being sponged off of. Don't you like my snotty accent? Yes. I don't very often get the opportunity to do it. So I didn't want to miss the opportunity when it came around this evening. So we've got that going for us, which is good. And this is actually a little bit more disturbing than common garden variety Titanic Tuesday intellect. And it's also outside the realm of your general right-wingery. Although I suppose one could always make the argument that one does not rise up into the thin oxygen atmosphere of the high military brass without being to some degree or another right-wing. I mean, the military by nature is authoritarian and right-wing, conservative, if you will. And so, lo and behold, and I went back and double-checked. Because when you see something as inflammatory as this, you want to make sure that nobody's just outright lying to you. Because the interweb tubes can cause one to stumble periodically. Witness, for instance, the duping of a whole bunch of different outfits and organizations by a fake story over the weekend that, oh, I wanted it to be real so badly. It would have led more in Monday last night. A fake story about Costco in Mesa, Arizona, removing a cake from its available cake designs because a Christian mother had identified the number 666 on the legs of a dinosaur on a cake. Yeah, well, it was fake. But the problem was, people bought it and ran with it because in this country, in this age, it makes perfect sense and seems absolutely undeniably likely to be true. Well, this one is true. At one point in time, there were a lot of people who thought that General Wesley Clark was, in the for-profit media usage, presidential timber. Shucks, I even met the man one time. He was hobnobbing around some environmental meeting I was at in Washington, D.C. I think it was the Blue-Green Alliance meeting. It comes from an interview with the famous progressive blogger, Digby. And what she reported was, I've always liked Wesley Clark, and he said some reasonable stuff in his interview with Thomas Roberts this morning before he said the following. Actually, she's reporting it. She didn't interview him. It was an interview with Thomas Roberts of NBC. And it came on the heels of, you know, the latest installment payment on our butcher's bill, otherwise known as the Second Amendment. Because, of course, when white people kill lots of folks, we don't worry about self-radicalized terrorists. Or when 63-year-old preachers talk about getting a group of 9 or 10 like-minded individuals together and going up and slaughtering a bunch of people in a little hamlet in New York State, we don't call them self-radicalized terrorists. That's only for people whose names end in names that we recognize as being sort of either from the Arabic tradition or possibly the Muslim tradition. I mean, it might be a good place to remind folks that the Prophet Muhammad was not the first person to ever be named Muhammad. He just kind of made the name famous. Kind of like Madonna. Or Gaga. But Thomas Roberts was interviewing Wesley Clark. And, of course, Thomas Roberts asked him about the problem that America has with self-radicalization. You have to sort of set your jaw and get it all squared up and say, self-radicalization. Because, see, like I said, those 63-year-old engineers and Christian pastors who decide on their own, mind you, well, I mean, with a little bit of help from, you know, folks like, oh, Alex Jones, or the Beckerhead, or O'Reilly, or Bernie Goldberg, or Limbaugh, or Hannity, or any of it, maybe Brian Fisher. I mean, there's always a little help. But those guys, no, we don't talk about them being self-radicalizing. And it's not because we recognize that they had help either. I mean, they're just lawful gun owners who, well, they had more than they could stand, and so they shot up a movie theater or a grocery store or a university campus or an elementary school. I mean, you know, because sometimes white people just do that. Oh, but if his name is Abdulaziz, we're worried about the self-radicalizing terrorists. Which was clearly on the mind of Thomas Roberts as he sat down with Wesley Clark, for reasons God knows why. And Wesley Clark's response to the self-radicalization question was as follows. We've got to identify the people who are most likely to be radicalized. I'm sorry, whenever some general or former general is speaking seriously, I always have a mental image in my head of General Jack D. Ripper with that glass in his hand and that cigar sticking out of his mouth and that shot that Stanley Kubrick had from down below looking up. Yeah. I can no longer tolerate communist infiltration of our government, communist infiltration of our schools, communist infiltration of our culture, and the sapping of our precious bodily fluids. That's what I always think of when generals talk. Because you know they're all a little bit nuts. So Wesley Clark says, we've got to identify the people who are most likely to be radicalized. We've got to cut this off at the beginning. There are always a certain number of young people who are alienated. They don't get a job. They lost a girlfriend. Their family doesn't feel happy here, and we can watch the signs of that. And there are members of the community who can reach out to those people and bring them back in and encourage them to look at their blessings here. Blessings. Blessings. You know, blessings. Like having no job and no prospect of a job. Or maybe having gone to college and being $250,000 in debt, and the best thing you can find is a $9 an hour job at McDonald's that pays you 20 hours a week. Blessings! Mm-hmm. And of course, when we're talking about, you know, these kids who are, well, they don't get a job, they lost a girlfriend, their family doesn't feel happy here. We can watch the signs of that. Who's watching the signs of that? The NSA? Oh, no, we've got community members. Reach out to the people and bring them back in. But I do think, and this is where it begins to get a little creepy, I do think on a national policy level we need to look at what self-radicalization means, because we're at war with this group of terrorists. Which group of terrorists, your generalness? Because it seems like we've got a whole bunch of people all over the world pissed off at us, and I think we're going to have to narrow it down a little beyond this group of terrorists. They do have an ideology. In World War II, if someone supported Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, we didn't say that was freedom of speech. We put him in a camp. They were prisoners of war. Well, unless your name was Bush. Yeah, this might be an appropriate time. Let's see, 19 minutes before the hour on this, the 21st day of July, 2015. To remind all and sundry that the grandfather of Jeb Bush, presidential candidate in 2015, was busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act during World War II. That would fall, would it not, under the general rubric there, your most majestic, noble, gracious generalness of supporting Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, wouldn't it? But then again, supporting Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, that sounds like treason, the only crime defined in fact, the Constitution of the United States. Well, we'll skip to the end of the story real quick. Because Prescott Bush was not, put in a camp or made prisoner of war. No, he paid a little fine, and it was swept quietly under the rug, and Brown Brothers Harriman went on doing business, and Fritz Thyssen went on supporting the Third Reich. And what are the words from the old song? And never was heard a discouraging word, and the skies were not cloudy all day. Got it. Self-radicalized. Was the Bush family self-radicalized? Was Prescott Bush self-radicalized by avarice? By an insatiable need to make more money? Because oddly enough, that seems to be the self-radicalization that does the most damage around the world. You want more money, so you blow up some mountains and poison a community. You want more money, so you create a giant toxic waste dam in British Columbia that gives way and fouls the water for miles, or maybe that happens in Mexico because it's happened in both places. Or you want more money, so you turn an entire huge visible from space hunk of a Canadian province into the goddamn moon. Or you want more money, so you put goo from North Dakota on train cars that shouldn't be carrying it, and they go through little towns every now and then, and they just go, boom, and kill a few people, or don't kill a few people, or cause people to be evacuated, or blow their house up, and somehow, miraculously, they live. Oddly enough, General Wesley Clark isn't concerned with those kind of self-radicalized terrorists. No, hell no. Or let's say you've got a self-radicalized terrorist who's vice president of the United States, and you dummy up reasons to go to war with a country that hasn't lifted a finger against you, and a million people suddenly get dead, and yet the company that you worked for before you became vice president accrues millions and billions of dollars in the process. That ain't the self-radicalization we're talking about. No, hell no. So there seems to be a little bit of wiggle room in General Wesley Clark's remarks. But he continued, by the way, all those people we put in internment camps who were Japanese, of Japanese origin, we didn't put them in internment camps because they were supporting Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States. Hell, we didn't even put them in internment camps because they were supporting the Empire of Japan at the expense of the United States. We just put them in internment camps because we could, because they looked different. Even if they had been, and their parents and their parents before them, loyal, hard-working citizens of the Republic for a few couple of generations. No. So the judgmental dynamic seems to be a little bit fluid. Under the subject line, group of terrorists, Stephen New York writes, that group, you know, this group, and we can't forget the one group. Yeah. But Wesley Clark continued and said, So if these people are radicalized and they don't support the United States and they're disloyal to the United States, as a matter of principle, fine. It's their right, and it's our right and obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. Which, interestingly, in the case of the GWAT, the Global War on Terror, is the duration of the conflict is pretty much, you know, forever. CF, to wit, Guantanamo, Uyghurs, people uncharged with crimes ever, for whom there is no evidence whatsoever that they were ever involved in any crime, and they're still rotting away in a little corner of Cuba, because we don't want them on American soil, because that might trigger novel, not really novel at all, interesting, not even particularly interesting, but constitutional questions that are immediately answerable by a long line of cases that say, in short, you can't do that. But then again, to recall the words of Dim Leader during the Reign of Error, the Constitution's just a goddamn piece of paper. And yet, you know what's really interesting? Despite all that cruel mistreatment, the internees, the Japanese internees, didn't self-radicalize. When they were finally let out of prison for having committed no crime, they went back and struggled to put their lives, their American lives, back together again. So Wesley Clark says, so if these people are radicalized and they don't support the United States and they are disloyal to the United States, as a matter of principle, fine. It's their right and it's our right and obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. The hell does normal mean? Last I checked, it was a setting on a dryer, normal. Oh, white! Oh, got it, sorry. I slipped for a minute. I think we're going to have to increasingly get tough on this. Not only in the United States, but our allied nations like Britain, Germany, and France are going to have to look at their domestic law procedure. What's interesting is that Digby points out that people are arguing with her on Twitter that he couldn't possibly have said that. But he did, as she notes. And who's surprised? When you've got the world's biggest hammer, everything looks like a nail. I think somebody said that on this program. So there you have it, a retired general. I think we're talking about people in the United States self-radicalizing. And I think we're going to have a larger discussion about what self-radicalizing means anyway. But we're talking about people who are subject to the Constitution of the United States and the right of habeas corpus, because they're not already in Guantanamo, and secreting them out of the United States and into Guantanamo really doesn't solve the problem. Nor does building camps. Maybe those Texans have something about that Jade Helm thing after all. Anybody seen Wesley Clark near any abandoned Walmarts in Texas? False flag! And this is all based on the fact that a young man with easy access to firearms, because America, easier to get a firearm than a fishing pole in some places, Yeah, you could hurt somebody with a fishing pole. A young man who was depressed, who had had what appears to be a difficult, or at least imperfect, upbringing. There were allegations about the behavior of his father at one point wanting to go back to Pakistan and marry a second wife. Yeah. Eventually, Mama was talked out of divorcing his ass. But the young man made it through college, got an engineering degree at UT Chattanooga. Go Mocs. Got himself a job, but was one of those young people who fell apart. And here's the interesting thing. You don't have to be Muslim to fall apart as a young person. All you got to do is wander around southern West Virginia for a little while, and you can meet lots of young people who have fallen apart. Their teeth have dissolved in their head from meth. Or they're strung out on pills, and if they can't get pills, well, you know, it's a black market, but that means there's access, and, you know, heroin. And, of course, let's be abundantly clear, even though this isn't Prayer Meeting Wednesday, let's be abundantly clear that when General Wesley Clark, who I'm sure has a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, when he talks about self-radicalization, he ain't talking about right-wing, evangelical, fundamentalist Christians either. Because they don't self-radicalize, except when they do. You know, I'm hesitant to just immediately, anytime anybody, and there are people who do, and I've met them on Facebook. Anytime somebody shoots someone else, the libertarians and anarcho gun goobs and whatnot say, anybody who'd shoot anybody's got to be crazy. No, bullshit, no. This is America. We shoot other people for all kinds of non-crazy reasons. And note that a jury tried and true in Aurora, Colorado, just found the shooter there to be sane enough to convict of multiple counts of murder. And that's even after seeing him and hearing from him and knowing that he was on enough medications to choke a mastodon. So I hesitate on the crazy diagnosis. But as I've noted before, even if that does turn out to be the case, then the question arises, why is it so easy for people who might not be completely in charge of their faculties to acquire firearms? Eh? Right. But those aren't the self-radicalizers that Wesley Clark is talking about. He's talking specifically about Muslims. The vast majority of whom, probably on a percentage equivalent to that of Christians or Jews or Hindus or anybody else, are no more likely to shoot up a recruiting center than they are to fly to the moon. But try telling that to Wesley Clark. He wants a surveillance state. But sooner or later, doesn't that way lie East Germany, where everybody's surveilling everybody else and everybody's reporting on everybody else? Because it kind of seems that way to me. And what are the standards by which we're going to put into play General Clark's idea to segregate them from the normal community? Well, the easiest way would be by appearance, wouldn't it? Oh, look at you. You got a beard. Mm-hmm. Kind of dark-skinned. Look kind of Arabic to me. Kind of Middle Eastern. Uh-huh. Yeah. Look a little like, oh dear, like Jesus. No, he was blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Wait a minute. I mean, that would be the easy. And we've tried that before. And you know, certain parts of this country were very, very successful at segregating them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. And we know, of course, that when it was tried before, the duration of conflict was, as is the case with the GWAT, Global War on Terror, forever! Because there was no plan out in the future when the Jim Crow laws would go away. There was no plan out in the future when separate but equal would be gradually phased out in favor of total societal cultural integration. Because they were always going to be a threat to our white women. In point of fact, and it kind of dovetails here, down in Florida, Stan, in the Baker County Courthouse there is a mural that was painted in 2001. Not at 1901, 2001, by an artist by the name of Eugene Barber. And the mural on the Baker County Courthouse wall depicts white hooded figures on horseback. Gee! Who could that possibly be? And there are some people saying that following the removal of the devil's diaper from that flagpole in Columbia, South Carolina, that maybe this mural probably is not the best thing for people to see the minute they walk into the seat of justice in Baker County, Florida. And in the case of the mural in the Baker County Courthouse, Eugene Barber left a guidebook. He's dead now, but he explained the little pastiche which he had portrayed of the horse riding Klansmen. When the group known as the Radical Republicans gained control of the state in 1868, the Reconstruction program took an unpleasant turn. The reversed order was severely resented by a large segment of the white population. Notice that simply allowing people of color to be free is a reversal of order. No relief was given by the carpetbag and scallywag government or by the Union troops. The result was the emergence of secret societies claiming to bring law and order to the county. One of these groups was the Ku Klux Klan, an organization that sometimes took vigilante justice to extremes, you know, just sometimes, but was sometimes the only control the county knew over those outside the law, you know, those freed Negroes running amok. The Klan faded from view at the end of Reconstruction. Well, Reconstruction ended because the Klan didn't fade from view, but never mind. It had minor comebacks in the 1920s, mid-1950s. Since then, it has become the subject of legend rather than a cause of fear. Hmm. 2,000 people have signed petitions calling for the county to move, not remove, but move the mural. Because oddly enough, the artist, Eugene Barber, apparently didn't see fit to include any artistic renderings of all of those carpetbaggers and scallywags and Union troops not hipping. Or of the, lawlessness among ex-slaves and troublesome whites was the rule of the day. And yet, no portrayal of the lawless ex-slaves and troublesome whites. Maybe the Klansmen in the painting had already hanged them. And forgive me if it smells a little bit like this is the road down which Wesley Clark would have us again go. It's our right and obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict and the preservation of our precious bodily fluid. I added the bodily fluid part. That is some Titanic intellect. Hell, Wes, everybody else is running for the GOP presidential nomination. Jump in there, buddy! Or have you already endorsed Hillary? Like the American Federation of Teachers. Shut up. So there you have it. Someone who once had command of tens of thousands of American and NATO forces, who apparently has a taste for, if not ethnic cleansing, then certainly ethnic cornering. And all of this against, and you would think a man like Wesley Clark would know better. Against the backdrop of a country where the Bush administration, you know, the reign of error, the Bush Justice Department studied terrorism threats in America and came to the conclusion, right as he was leaving office, that the greatest threat to domestic tranquility in the United States wasn't Muslims or Muslim terrorists, but was, in fact, the radicalized right. And they don't self-radicalize. They have, in a word, lots of help. There are more militias out there that you could shake a stick at. You got Aryans and Klansmen and ministers, even. And they don't, and the entire radio networks devoted to them. And we've had a whole lot more white folks shooting up schools and theaters and grocery stores than Muslims, by a long shot. But Wesley Clark knows that he can't argue that they ought to be penned up somewhere. What was the phrase? Segregated. Segregated. It's getting interestinger and interestinger, isn't it? Irish Dave pointing out, come on, Bob, it's a well-known true fact, WTF, that vigilante action taken to the extreme is really just a lifestyle choice. too. Also, General Wesley Clark's home of record is Little Rock. It's not his fault. Oy. You know, it's funny. I've got a bumper here for the occasion, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. And it's funny that we both chose the same artist. Perhaps proof that that artist should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I chose one song. Ron chose another. We'll go with Ron's. Yes, we will. And yes, we try to raise $200 every evening, and this is no different. And we are here an hour into the program now, because I was a little bit late getting started. We are still at zero. Hopefully that will not remain the case for the next 1 hour and 50 minutes. 53 minutes. 1 hour and 53 minutes. PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And the mailing address. I didn't give the mailing address this evening. I should, I suppose, constantly. The Horn, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, to send them to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, and maybe send me a note so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne not to expect to have his finger, his hand, the spider-proof gloves gnawed off of his hands when he reaches into the box. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I think we all love Warren Zevon. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
I hear mariachi static on my radio, and the tubes, they glow in the dark. And I'm there with her in Ensenada, and I'm hearing Carmelita, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down, and I'm all strung out on heroin on the outskirts of town. Yeah, I'm sitting here playing solitaire. My pearl handled deck. The county won't give me no more methadone. They cut off your welfare check. Carmelita, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down, and I'm all strung out. Skirts of town. Come on. sinking down, and I'm all strung out on heroin on the outskirts of town.
It's Tuesday, July 21, 2015.
All of this started on the 15 freeway.
Extreme weather whips California freeways.
A 30 by 50 foot section of California's Interstate 10 freeway collapsed Sunday.
From floods to fire as bridges collapse and cars burn. June 2015 was the hottest June on record. Plus,
the Pacific has become a playground for cyclones.
Global hurricane season is off to a record start.
All of those records and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Perhaps maybe people would be more for preventing global warming if we referred to it as taking a stand for preserving traditional sea levels.
Yep, that might do it. This is your Green News Report.
As the Bible says, it is Adam and Eve, not Adam and Gold.
Okay, Desi Doyen, climate change seems to be coming home to roost out here in Southern California.
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. We'll start with what happened on Friday. In a shockingly apocalyptic scene, a major wildfire shut down Interstate 15 in parched Southern California. That's the primary corridor between Los Angeles and Las Vegas, all because of a fast-moving wildfire that overtook the freeway and cars stuck in traffic, forcing motorists to flee on foot.
Cars were abandoned, and many of them, of course, caught fire and were completely burned. And the firefighters trying to stop this blaze before it could burn down major parts of the small city.
Really disturbing. We know that part of the I-15 very, very well, and there is nowhere to run. And it did look like a scene from, I don't know, Mad Max, Walking Dead, take your pick, as drivers fled the scene for their lives.
Yes, one motorist actually did describe it as, quote, like something out of The Walking Dead. Now, luckily, no one was injured, but 20 cars and 11 homes were destroyed. California's historic drought has turbocharged wildfire season. And making matters worse, a hobbyist's drone was reported flying near the fire, so the U.S. Forest Service was forced to ground all of its firefighting planes, which allowed the fire to expand unchecked. The Forest Service has launched an awareness campaign to let the public know firefighters are required to land whenever drones are spotted. In another section of Southern California, on Sunday, extreme weather whiplash shut down another vital transportation artery out of the state when unseasonal record rain triggered by Hurricane Dolores in Mexico caused flash flooding.
A portion of the I-10 up between Arizona and the California line closed right now due to a bridge collapse. Flooding, though, also blocking all the lanes in the area and is shut down the highway. It's not known when the lanes in both directions on the 10 are going to reopen.
And we know that section of the I-10 well. Also, there is nowhere to go when that highway shuts down.
I had to double back into Arizona and head south down to Yuma. It was pretty much a 7.5-8 hour detour.
So yes, between droughts, floods, bridge collapse, climate change, the climate crisis is really coming home out here in Southern California.
Yes, now mark that. It's two major arteries that ship people and products out of Southern California, both of them shut down to extreme weather impacts, just like what happened in Oklahoma and Texas last month. It's demonstrating once again that our nation's aging infrastructure is not designed for and we are not prepared to deal with these extreme weather impacts. Meanwhile, NASA announced late last week that June 2015 was the hottest June on record, tied with the Super El Nino year of 1998.
Is that globally or here in the U.S.?
That's globally. And now the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has announced that the first half of this year has been the hottest first half of any year on record, meaning it's now all but certain that 2015 will be the hottest year on record.
Remember the beginning of last year when all the climate deniers fires were saying there hasn't been any warming in like 17 years?
Yes, I do.
That's really cute, isn't it?
That heat is brewing a record hurricane season, already reaching a record 11 named storms for 2015. That's combined for both the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean basins. Meteorologist Paul Douglas on MSNBC's Ed Schultz show explains that the rapidly warming Pacific is supercharging typhoons and hurricanes.
I'm seeing some numbers in the middle Pacific that are just staggering. They call it ACE, accumulated cyclone energy. And it's 22 times greater than it should be this time of year in the central Pacific.
Yeah, you know, we've had all kinds of storms, cyclones, and typhoons, as they call them in the Pacific, that have hit in Japan, in Mexico. But, you know, they didn't hit Florida, so they never really happened at all here in the U.S.
And to give you an idea of just how unprecedented this hurricane season is in the Pacific, since 1949, only three tropical storms in total have formed in the normally dead quiet Central Pacific. But this year, there have been three storms since January alone.
Amazing. Buckle up for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to. Please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We're 12 minutes away from the halfway mark on this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And we're not going to be lacking for stuff to work with. Because there's a lot of stupid out there. I mean, a lot of stupid. Sometimes it's pseudoscientific stupid. Sometimes it's, you know, religious stupid, political stupid, military stupid, as witnessed General Wesley Clark. And what we need to do is segregate them. Yeah. In this case, this Titanic Tuesday mention goes out, of course, to Nevada. Well, not of course, but Nevada is competing. They're definitely in the running, alongside your Oklahomas and Alabamas and Texases, your South Carolinas. Nevada doesn't want to be left out. In this case, it's Nevada Assemblywoman Michelle Fiore, and she, by the way, is another 1L Michelle. I don't know. Don't know why. Now, Michelle Fiore, a Republican who sits in the Nevada Assembly, is also a big fan of Clavern Bundy, who would like to take a moment to tell us about the black man. She runs a business. I'd say marginal, but apparently not, the healthcare industry. Over the last 5 years, the business, and she runs it with the help of her mama, they've gotten $6 million in Medicaid money. Now, she is, of course, a Republican who despises socialized medicine and that kind of thing, but that never kept, you know, something like hypocrisy never kept a Republican's front feet out of the trough, nor kept them from trying to get the back trotters in there with them. Yeah. Now, when you take a lot of Medicaid money like that, people who run the program like to make sure that the money is actually being used for, you know, providing services to Medicaid patients. But Michelle Fiore is not going to, Fiore, there's no accent ague over the E or anything. It's F-I-O-R-E. Figure it out. She doesn't want anybody looking at her books. And so the state is getting a little testy and thinking about revoking her license to operate her scofflaw business. She's even taken, she's even using her legislative position to try to introduce legislation that would keep the inspectors from coming back to look at her books. She's got one more meeting and one more chance to keep the state from yanking her license. And here's a fun thing. She refuses to answer questions when she's asked about whether or not the federal government is legitimate. And just one more thing. This woman, who has received over the last 5 years $1.16 million per year, I can't do the gazintas on that, but it's over $1 million. She has publicly stated I'm not kidding and not making this up. And this goes back to earlier this year in a report from Think Progress. She wants to provide alternative cancer treatments, which tells you a little bit maybe about the $6 million over 5 years, or $5 million over. Wait, is it less than a million? I'm getting lost. You know, one of these days when we hit the big time, we're going to hire a full time mathematician just to sit here and do my ciphering and gazintas for us. She's got a radio show that goes out every Saturday, and she wants to introduce a terminally ill bill. Oh God. That will let non-FDA-approved treatments be used for those diagnosed as having terminal illnesses. You want the quote? Get the hockey puck. Tear off a nice strip of duct tape for this.
If you have cancer, which I believe is a fungus. If you have cancer, which I believe is a fungus, notice she says believe and not know, because science is an article of faith just like religion. If you have cancer, which I believe is a fungus, and we can put a PICC line into your body and we're flushing, let's say, salt water, sodium carbonate, through that line and flushing out the fungus, these are some procedures that are not FDA approved in America that are very inexpensive, cost effective. The American Cancer Society, what?
And see, this is a classic case of a right-winger taking a little grain of truth and then turning it into something it completely isn't, because capitalism. According to the American Cancer Society, cancer patients whose immune systems have been compromised in chemo sometimes get fungal infections. But in its classic science-based way, the American Cancer Society went on to say, there is no evidence that antifungal treatment causes the patient's tumors to shrink. And yet, out there, among the credulous, there remains this persistent myth that you can cure cancer with baking soda. She was the Republican majority leader in the Nevada Assembly. Yeah, really. And by the way, 5 states have now passed similar legislation that allows patients to use drugs not cleared by the FDA in cancer treatment. You know, even if it's bicarbonate of soda in a bag run through a pick line. I mean, if salt water cures cancer, then I guess no, because it's that time of year and I start thinking along these lines, you know, August college football drills will begin soon, August practice. And especially in the hotter parts of the country, you'll see athletes begin to cramp up and not be able to stand the heat because they're just, you know, they're sweating everything out and their muscles cramping it. And they take them on the sideline, and the first thing they do is they've got a trainer there who will put a bag of salt water and run it intravenously. And it relieves the cramps, but it doesn't cure cancer. I mean, I would think we would have empirical data by now after, several decades of college football in hot weather states, as to whether or not anybody who's ever got a bag of sodium chloride solution ever got cancer? Because I think they have. But this is what happens when profit and capitalism run out ahead of science. You see, we're just tap dancing on this woman's freedom to suck money out of a Medicaid system that really can't afford the waste, so that she can tell people that cancer is a fungus. And there are people who are dead because of this woman. Oh, but God, no, yeah. We've got to give her some due process there. I mean, even though she won't let anybody see her books. Cancer's a fungus. And Craven Bundy is a hero. Beautiful, isn't it? And then this. Now, we talked a little bit last night, and if you want to continue the discussion, I welcome it. Both lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. We talked a little bit last night about what happened in Arizona at Netroots Nation when the Black Lives Matter activists interrupted Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders, but not Hillary Clinton, because Hillary didn't go there, wouldn't be there in a million years, because then the Republicans would say, she's the most left-leaning since Teddy Kennedy, Trotsky. Oh, I'm sorry, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, bless your heart, Brother Bob, you could have issued a hockey puck warning before you busted out the saltwater cancer cure. I spit out the Don Julio all over my steering wheel. Don't drink and drive, Asa. You might spill your drink. But I think we can all generally agree, also based upon the epic David Brooks takedown yesterday, that white-splaining is kind of embarrassing. No, it's really embarrassing. But, am I on the verge of coining a new term? Cosby-splaining to the black community is equally obnoxious. And what I mean by that is all those lectures from Bill Cosby to the black community about sagging pants and so forth, they take on a new irrelevance in the face of the fact that the man may very well have been allegedly a serial rapist. Enter ESPN Stephen Smith. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest part of the thing, the issue that was raised in Arizona had to do with when they said Black Lives Matter, and he and Martin O'Malley responded, "All lives matter," which is the wrong answer under those circumstances. Enter Stephen Smith. And I do. He did this on the radio. ESPN has a radio network. I think this is worthy of a Titanic Tuesday nomination. Just because it sounds so white or so Cosby. That's what it sounds. It sounds so Cosby. Stephen Smith. Well, dang it. We'll get it yet.
Let me preface my comments by saying I am fully aware of the fact that no one white can say what I'm about to say. But damn it, I'm going to say it.
Oh, my. So that means he's not speaking for the black community. He's speaking for white folks? Don't white folks have enough white folks speaking already? Isn't that part of the problem? I got a sneaking suspicion there may be more hockey pucks called for, and you might have to tear off another strip of duct tape, and damn it, Brother Deacon Asa, put down the Don Julio.
Democratic presidential candidate Martin O'Malley apologized on Saturday. Ladies and gentlemen, guess why he apologized? Because during a discussion in front of an abundance of African Americans, he said all lives matter, as opposed to black lives matter. Now, there's a lot of things that I could get into, but this is a sports show, and I'm not going to get into that.
Except you already did.
But just to make my position clear, I got 2 points to make. What the hell is he supposed to say? I mean, the next thing you're going to know, you're
going to... Wait. What the hell is he supposed to say? Activists come up and they interrupt your speech for the purpose of bringing attention to the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a real movement, which is based upon the intense frustration over, and I cannot begin to name them all, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland now, Eric Garner, and on and on and on. 9 dead, including Clemente Pinckney in Charleston, South Carolina, at Bible study. And you know what you're supposed to say when they say Black Lives Matter? Maybe the simplest, easiest answer is yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes. And they matter more than this country acknowledges. But that apparently, Martin O'Malley said all lives matter. That's just the wrong answer when the three words that are being used are being used for the purpose of pointing out the disproportionate degree to which people of color in this country are slain by police, and the wide variety of ridiculous reasons that that happens. A little girl in a bikini at a pool party in a racist section of town in Texas gets a knee in her back for being at a pool party. The actual causes of death of Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Walter Scott, either at the hands of police or at the hands of somebody who was a wannabe cop. Now, how is it that I, a really white guy, can understand this, but Stephen Smith doesn't? How is it that I can understand this, imperfectly, but can attempt to reach that understanding, but it's lost on a highly paid sports journalist? Yeah, I don't know. But that ain't the end of it.
What are you going to ask him to say next? Only Black Lives Matter? All lives do matter. Now, we understand where the Black Lives Matter originated from. I mean, in the aftermath of Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner, I mean, the list goes on and on, Michael Brown. We understand that, and nobody's ignoring that. And nobody's ignoring that as a society, we got some serious problems. Nobody's denying that there's problems with racism, that to some degree, some police officers acting up, that problem has to be addressed. But what is a presidential candidate supposed to say? That's point number one. Here's the biggest point about...
Took a long time for him to get to the explaining that point number one, which he already told us was point number one, was point number one. And, you know, there's the answer. Yes, Black Lives Matter. Yes. Do continue.
Point number two. And I'm looking at my brother Marcus Matthews sitting right next to me. My friend handles some of my business and social media. And I'm looking at my white producer, and I ain't going to lie to you, Nuno Texiera, I don't know what the hell you are. I mean, you're Portuguese, and I love you, Nuno. I know you know I'm saying that with affection, bro. I hope you know that, okay? Portuguese, that's what he is. Nuno, the Nuno threw me off, okay? But here's the deal. I have to say this, I guess rhetorically, to my brothers and sisters, because I am a black man. Where's the noise about all Black Lives Matter when black folks are killing black folks?
I told you it was going to be Cosby's planning. Didn't I? Mm-hmm. You know, the last time I heard, what about all the black-on-black crime? Well, A, it was said in an accent just like that. Yeah, but what about all the black-on-black crime? Why ain't they hollering about that? That was said by somebody who probably had the devil's diaper waving above their head or on the butt of their jeans or stitched on their damn jacket. What about the black-on-black crime? One does not negate the other. Black Lives Matter is a discussion that takes place in a universe in which there are manifest horrors that white people, or as it's put in Mr. Coates' book, people who think they are white. Well, things that people who think they will never experience. Ever. Ever. But we got some more Cosby-splaining to do.
You see, that's where you lose me. So a presidential candidate who isn't black happens to stand up and says, all lives matter. Hillary Clinton, a presidential candidate who may probably get the Democratic nomination for the presidency, she says all lives matter, and then she has to couch it and then come back and retract and all of this other stuff. So we mandate that they say black lives matter. But we got black folks dying at the hands of black folks in this country. And we're not hearing that. At least we hadn't been hearing that. Don't get me started on the murders in Chicago.
I can tell you how this wealthy man votes just based on the words I've heard out of his mouth right here. The word Chicago has become a dog whistle word. It entered the dog whistle lexicon in the election cycle of 2008. Oh, he was a community organizer in Chicago. He's part of the Chicago machine, and David Axelrod, and pals around with terrorists, and Jeremiah Wright. Yeah, we got about 3 minutes left in the clip here. Anybody want to take odds? By the way, last night's Hitler pool was 8:54 p.m. I don't know who had 8:54, but it was. Anybody want to take odds on mention of Bill Ayers, Jeremiah Wright, David Axelrod, or you know, Chicago General? Well, no, we've got the Chicago generally, right? One does not negate the other. Black on black crime falls within the idea that black lives matter. Then again, of course, there is the question of why we don't talk about all the goddamn white on white crime. We talk about black on black crime as if it's something incomprehensible that, you know, nobody in their right mind would do. You know, unless you were those people. But the whites are out here criming the hell out of the whites. But none of those heritage not hate bunches are saying, what about the white on white crime? No. You know, what do you reckon this guy makes? $500,000 a year? Million? How much money does it take? How much money do you have to make before it washes away your blackness to the point that you can become one of those people that Mr. Coates refers to as people who think they're white? Shh. By the way, our buddy the Angry Indian tells me that the majority of cop killers in this country are, anybody? White!
Yeah, but what about Mamiya?
We're gonna get through this. Chicago. Don't get him started on Chicago. He seems to be self-starting on Chicago. On with Stephen Smith's Cosby-splaining.
And to some degree throughout other parts of this country. I'm just saying. It's a sports show. I'm gonna get back to sports.
Good.
It ain't too many black men hosting the national radio show. And I just can't let this slide. All lives do matter. Now, Black Lives Matter resonates with us because of what we endured throughout our community. And I'm not saying that somebody shouldn't say that Black Lives Matter. What I'm saying is, there's nothing wrong with somebody highlighting that all lives matter. That's not a reason for somebody to be booed. It's not a reason for a presidential candidate to have to apologize.
Anybody got a Thorazine dart for Stephen Smith? Because he's getting a little wrought. Sure it is. Because if those protesters had interrupted the speech and his response had been, I like pie, well, that's the same thing as all lives matter. Or, hey, buddy, you got a light? Because it is an attempt to divert attention away from the issue being raised. Two more minutes, I promise.
Apologize? Does anybody take a moment to realize how we look when we force someone to apologize for saying all lives matter? Do you not have any idea how that makes us look? Especially when black folks are getting killed by black folks every day. And that's not to say that white folks ain't killing white folks, because that happens too.
Oh, well, I'm so glad he got around it. That happens too. I mean, you know, once in a great while. Tell me, because I'm curious here, because I do get lost in all the taxonomy after a while. Was Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz white or black? Oh, he's a Muslim! Oh, that's worse than either one, right? See how it goes? You see, we give Mr. Abdulaziz his own little, and after all, because Wesley Clark said we need to segregate him, we give him his own little category, and that's self-radicalized terrorism. Reckon Eric Garner's widow feels terrorized? How about Tamir Rice's mama? Michael Brown's parents? Walter Scott's family? Trayvon's family? The 9 grieving families out of Charleston. You reckon they feel terrorized? Are we using the wrong damn metric here? Instead of the intent of the shooter, how about we measure by the response of the victims? Because if we don't, then everything just falls down. It becomes a one long Republican non-apology apology where we're saying, I'm sorry if you were offended. That ain't an apology. No. Just a minute more of Stephen Smith, and then we'll go to the phones.
But black folks are killing black folks every day. And we never heard Black Lives Matter.
Moment. Having a logic problem here. I'm not sure if I'm having it or if Stephen Smith is having it. You can help me sort it out. Is he suggesting that if only black folks stop killing black folks, then white police will stop killing black folks? Is he suggesting that if black folks stop killing black folks, then the Dylan Roofs will stop going into AME churches and blowing away 9 people? Is that it? Is white racism in America a response to black-on-black violence? Because that's the argument that this moron
appears to be making. And it doesn't work. It's a non sequitur. Or else it's all part of the same thing. And to try to separate it out is just a bullshit evasion of the actual issue. And I don't know what which way it breaks on that one.
So what are we saying? That Black Lives Matter only when we're killed by somebody who's not black?
I don't think so. But you're already in the hole, Stephen. Keep digging.
Come on now. Come on now. There's a presidential election coming up in a little over a year. Let's keep our eyes on the prize, focus on issues, and stop allowing.
Yeah, what issues, Stephen? I mean, being as how you're a sports reporter and everything, what issues? Who gets the next new stadium? What poor community gets bulldozed for the next arena? Which university system gets its budget cut to keep an NBA franchise in a town? What's the prize, Stephen? A contract extension? Better digs in a nicer community up there somewhere near Bridgeport where the car comes to get you every day and take you to ESPN headquarters? What's the prize?
Stuff like this to distract us. All lives do matter. Black plus white plus Hispanic plus Asian plus Native American. All lives do matter.
Well, I'm sure the Hispanics, the Asians, and the Native Americans are grateful to you for being remembered. Privilege flows off this guy like a mighty river, doesn't it? Marty just said something that immediately occurred to me, only Marty says it better. Marty says, you know, we need Stuart Scott to come back from the dead and just slap this guy. Yeah, because I'm an ESPN viewer. Have been. Way back in my salad days, the Halcon days of my late youth and early middle age, Sports Center was, well, I was more likely to watch that than some news programs. And this is the ESPN A game? Wowzer. But Stephen Smith would like us to. Okay, so I'm sure all the indigenous people in the United States feel forever in your debt, Steve.
If you want somebody to emphasize that Black Lives Matter, fine, considering what we just went through. But don't act like they need to apologize for saying all lives matter.
We? Were you in the pews there? We? You and that mouse in your pocket? We? Oh, screw it. I'd rather talk to the angry Indian. Hey, angry. Oh, angry. This is the horn. Calling angry Indian. Angry. Are we reaching? Yeah, I got the right thing up. Hang on here. Well, let's try this again. Angry, do I have you?
Hello.
There you are.
I don't know what that was.
In those moments, we just say Skype.
Skype or...
Well,
I don't know.
But you know what? We now, I mean, I think we've got a pretty good audition tape for the heir apparent to the guy who will chastise the black community now that Bill Cosby can't anymore.
Oh, yeah, Bob, Brother Bob, these motherfuckers are crawling over each other to, you know, who can denigrate the African community best, first, and get whatever's in line. They're lining up. You know, when the Choctaw Nation welcomed President Obama here last week, it was a black guy. I'm not going to call him an African because he'd find that offensive. It was a black guy, okay, who showed up, supposedly leading a group of white people waving Confederate flags to welcome.
Oh, I saw it. Nice. It was just lovely.
Yeah. Well, if you go to that fucker's Facebook page, he identifies himself as a public figure. He's only 20, maybe 21. Matter of fact, I don't even think he's 21, because when he was 19, with four other young men, four white men, that's what the article says, four white men, he shot at a sheriff in Oklahoma, this upstanding public figure who is leading a parade of white bigots waving Confederate flags against President Barack Obama, who was visiting the Choctaw Nation. They stood on the outside of the reservation border and said that this was a civil rights issue for white people, that this was a heritage issue for white people. There was a Canadian. He's in Canada. He's in Saskatchewan. He is suing because he's saying that the I'm still trying to figure out who it is exactly that he's suing. But this is reported in the CBC. He's suing, saying that the negative reportage that they're giving on the mainstream media is giving on the Confederate flag offends him because his family left North Carolina, more than 100 years ago and resettled in Canada. And he's suing from Canada. So this is what Shep Smith is down with, right? Ben Carson, like I said, J.C. Watts, you know, any of them. There's several black men that are out here. Matter of fact, one just died. And now the nutcases are trying to turn this into a Black Panther Party plot to kill black people.
No, stop it. Quit it. No, I mean, you're exaggerating now, right?
No, I'm not.
Bringing up the Panthers?
No. They're exaggerating by bringing up the Panthers. First off, the Black Panther Party doesn't goddamn exist any motherfucking more. So says Bobby Seale. So says everybody else that survived all that shit. The Black Panther Party is done. These are a bunch of black fascists that are running around calling themselves the new Black Panther Party. They are not the Black Panther Party. They have nothing to do with the original Black Panther Party. They're far-right extremists, and they're running the rhetoric from the power of the name as far as they can go. So you had three or four of them stand at a during the last election, stand at a voters registration thing. Some white men were intimidated. So now the entire black underground is trying to intimidate white people, and they won't let it go. Just like Planned Parenthood, they won't let it go. They defunded Acorn what, 2-3 times? They won't let it go. You know, Donald Trump.
How many times did they vote to overturn the Affordable Care Act? What are we at, 58?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to keep doing this.
They're like a dog with an old bone on anything they don't like.
Which is just about everything. They don't like anything. They don't like their fucking selves. So, you know, when you get somebody, and, you know, you said it, Brother Bob, exactly. Here is a black man who's making very good fucking money. And I'm sorry for people who like sports, my brothers who like sports, but I have to goddamn say this, man. You know, every motherfucker I watch when I, you know, have to sit with my wife and her friends sucking on my apple juice while they're sitting there hanging out, all these pubs, all you see is fucking sports and Fox goddamn news. And every fucking black man I see on these goddamn shows, I don't give a fuck who it is. Every goddamn one of them sounds just like this fucking fool because they're making that goddamn money. They have white people patting them on the fucking back. Okay? They got white women looking at them and offering them sex. I'm telling you, fucking Brother Bob, because I've been there. I've done that bullshit. I've been an Uncle Tom most of my conscious motherfucking life, and I'm telling you. But even then, I was never this goddamn fucking stupid. I was never a human fucking lawn jockey. I was never a fucking human lawn jockey. My motherfucking mistake was I believed in this goddamn place. And I figured, yeah, you know, all the rhetoric is this, there, and the other. You know, you can't do any fucking better than you can do here. And I tried to negotiate this shit. But all the motherfucking time, I always knew what the fuck was going on. You know, I'm sitting there with white people having dinner, and they're saying, yeah, you know, present company excluded, but there's some really stupid Negroes at my goddamn job, and really dead niggas. But, you know, I mean...
Please. No, because, see, then we go into the...
You know, my old granny always told me that there's two kinds of black people.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, I was raised by parents that said that. My black father, Geechee, couldn't goddamn speak English until he was about 8 fucking years old, was always good for saying they're niggers and they're black people. Because he believed, because he told me this face to face, that he was a black man and that he was worth nothing. So anything that white people gave him, he was grateful fucking for. You understand? So, you know, and my mother was also tripping like that. You know, as a native fucking person. You know, she was tripping. Oh, you can't do any better than you'll do here. This is the best of all fucking possible worlds. So I understand. Like I said, Obama, motherfuckers like Shep Smith, I've worn those fucking moccasins. I've walked those fucking shoes. You know, but I could never really in my mind, you know, say, yeah, this is all totally cool. You know, I couldn't deal with this. So, you know, as far as white people were concerned, well, he's that radical guy. But you know what? He reads Shakespeare and shit, and he listens to fucking Burt Bacharach. So he's cool. He doesn't dress like these other guys. He's cool. He spends money on fucking clothes and shit. He's cool. He doesn't look like the average nigga. He doesn't act like the average nigga. He's cool. But, and see, and I would be in goddamn parties with fuckers like, you know, Smith. Oh, man, you know, you know, if I get to know that white guy, you know, shit's going to move for me, man. You know, and like that cat over there, maybe if you can get, you know, with him and just that and the other, and like, you know, we can do this and we can keep the mother niggas out.
But, and see, there's angry, there's this, you know, in this kind of a conversation that I feel like I'm at a distinct disadvantage and I'm on shifting sands because I don't want to say one thing, meaning one thing, and screw up and you understand. Mm-hmm. But there's a line there, isn't there? When Barack Obama was running for president the first time, it wasn't, I mean, you remember Rush Limbaugh and his little song, Barack the Magic Negro?
Well, I don't think he did it, but he certainly promoted that.
Yeah, no, another guy did it, but he promoted the hell out of it.
Michael Steele thought it was funny too.
And there's this, you know, there's this other dynamic of, well, you know, he is acting too white.
Yeah.
I'm reaching out. I'm asking for help here because the Stephen Smith clip pissed me off because it's not that hard to simply have somebody say to you "Black Lives Matter" and you say yes, but instead you got to be cute and say "All Lives Matter."
Well, like I said, who's he talking to? Who pays him? Who's he trying to fuck? You know, who's he trying to live next to? You know, you got Skip Gates when he had his goddamn black experience and shit, because that cop lied about the entire fucking affair. He lied on the written report. There was no mention of race or anything when that 911 call was made. He didn't like the fact that Gates got uppity because Gates figured, I'm a, you know, well-to-do, talented 10th Negro, and I shouldn't have to tolerate this type of shit. I mean, this is somebody who wrote. I'm not putting anything on him. This is what he said. He goes to the police stations in the communities in which he moves to basically register with them to say, I live in the neighborhood, and I, you know, work at Princeton or whatever fucking institution I'm at now, and you don't have to worry about me. I'm not putting that on him. That's what he said. This is also somebody that when he found out that left-wing, one-of-the-kind celebrity pretty boy used to fuck with J-Lo and all that kind of shit. When he found out that there was, you know, slavery, slave ownership in his goddamn family, the actor, the friend of Born Identity kid.
Yeah, Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. I got nothing against Ben Affleck, but what the fuck? You know, I mean, if you're going to talk shit about the left and blame the left for fucking the KKK when the Democrats were not left at that goddamn time because you're a fucking Republican fool, go ahead and do that. But go ahead and get, you know, the Democrats for shit that they are really fucking about. But they won't, because then that's like looking in the fucking mirror. Here's Ben Affleck, who of all the white people in Hollywood should have known better, especially at his fucking age group, knowing the people that he knows, you know, how the fuck did he turn around talking about Howard Zinn and then cover up the fact that his family owned slaves too? And then here you have Skip Gates, Mr. Talented 10th, who brags about the fact that his kids are all mixed, that brags about his own European fucking blood quantum. This is what he writes about. I'm not saying this on him. This is what he writes about. He helps Affleck cover that up. So he's absolutely useless.
And see, you got to forgive me, Angry. But on the Ben Affleck thing, I get lost in a hurry.
Well, what happened?
No. I know what happened. But what I mean by I get lost is I sit behind this microphone and I try to be pretty candid. And I talk about my heritage. And that photograph that's got my grandfather in it at a fucking Klan rally in 1922, okay? And I know my family tree. And I know what was going on. And I know there was slave ownership back there. But I don't expect that the Horn Family Commune congregation is going to go, oh, well, that Bob, he's a real asshole because his ancestors owned slaves.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they've got,
now you will get idiots that will do that, but they're extremists.
But you know, I give people lots of other reasons to say I'm an asshole. So, you know, take a number. But the larger issue is, you know why Ben Affleck had to do that? Because there are people in Hollywood and elsewhere who would excoriate him personally for what was done generations back. You see what I'm saying?
So well, I see what you're saying.
So
but,
you know,
you know.
And coming from Boston like he does, that's another problem.
Why?
Well, because
Boston's racist as hell.
Exactly.
You know,
and so,
what? They already hate him because he's making money anyway. You know, I mean, they're going to dislike him regardless.
Well, maybe that's part of the lesson. You know, something that we've said in regard to Barack Obama for a number of years now. He may as well go ahead and say it because they're not going to like him. I mean, you know, we've got all this crap out there of, you know, well, you know, if only he had gone golfing more often with John Boehner, and if only he'd gone polo playing. Or gone down to the, you know, if he would have just gone to a Klan rally with Mitch McConnell, well, they might have gotten more done in Congress. You know, you and I both know that is errant bullshit. But it plays like it's some sort of wisdom among the people, among the glue sniffers inside the Beltway.
Well, look, they're
you,
petty.
You see what I'm getting at?
Well, no, I know what you're getting at, but still, that's cowardice. You know, if white racism has to be dealt with, then white people have to stand up and deal with it instead of just waiting and expecting and demanding that the victims stand there, get their ass kicked, get pissed on, get spit on, watch your mama get fucking beat and put into the fucking hospital and shit, watch your father have his eyes fucking poked out, you know, by the cops, by white people. This is what the fuck I was told growing up. We're supposed to put up with this until they learn our capacity to love can overcome their hate. See, y'all could miss me. Those who believe in that shit can miss me with that. They can miss me with that. Because the same motherfuckers that are saying the black people need to fucking sit around here and wait, when 9-1-1 happened, they were ready to light up the whole fucking world. They didn't care who got hurt in the meantime. You know, and still don't give a fuck about who's being harmed by this shit. No matter what the fuck Obama does, they will have a problem with it. He's a capitalist, and he saved the motherfucking capitalist fucking system from complete fucking collapse. Will he get credit for this? Well, maybe later on, 20, 25 years after, you know, this current crop of fucking...
I mean, I give him credit right now because it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Damn Congress didn't do it.
Hell no. You know, and motherfucking, he's spreading, helping Christianity spread throughout Africa, spread throughout goddamn Asia. You know, they're paying for this shit here. Taxpayers are paying for this. Oh, he hates Israel. What the fuck are you talking about? Israel gets more goddamn money than any fucking buddy else. Every fucking day. They get more carte blanche than any fucking buddy else. Every fucking day. They were just removed from a goddamn list of nations that kill children on a regular basis when Israel does exactly that on a fucking regular basis. And if you ask these same yahoos that are worried about Planned Parenthood, you know, who are, I mean, totally fucking hypocritical. You don't like black people, but you're against black Planned Parenthood because black people go there for abortions. You know. You support the Confederate flag, but you're not a racist, even though the entire Confederacy, in the words of the fucking Confederates, was about white racism. You have to understand something, Brother Bob. You are sane. You live in the real world. You and I know that the world is round. These people believe in a fucking book that says that the world is flat. They reject science because it rejects their motherfucking belief system. They don't live in fucking reality. Ted Cruz says that Ted Cruz now, who was born in fucking Canada, Brother Bob, is saying that Trump is right. Every word of what he says is gold when it comes to immigration. This son of a bitch doesn't even belong here. He doesn't. And Canada doesn't want him back. We're dealing with maniacs. Trump is doing as well as he's doing because he's saying exactly what the fuck emotionally, not logically, because they're not thinking logically. He's saying emotionally what the fuck they've been thinking. There's too many goddamn niggas. There's too many spics coming over here. There's too many goddamn freaks and shit. I don't like the Amish. I don't want anybody around me that might be gay. You know, I'm totally freaked out because I'm forced to
without a doubt. And
who normally wouldn't care about this kind of shit or freak out, because just like you mentioned with Baffler, they're worried about repercussions from being connected to what other white people are doing instead of standing up and dealing with.
Yeah, okay. So, so the story came to mind of the county clerk in Round County, ROWA in Round County.
Yeah,
Kentucky.
That's sorry, son of a bitch. Yeah, fuck him.
She.
No. There's another one.
This is a woman in Round County, Kentucky. And she can't do her job because Jesus.
Does Jesus sign her check?
That's
paid for by the fucking taxpayers?
No.
No. So,
but
fuck
the,
her
but the,
religion.
But the taxpayers are probably all largely within in agreement with her. You know, the same way as the white folks were in agreement with the defeated Confederacy, as Reconstruction came in, that near battle, it was an actual battle in New Orleans in what, 1868, 1874. You know, that didn't happen by accident. That wasn't a spontaneous uprising of white people.
Well, neither was Rosewood, right? Where they cleaned that
right
out. Duluth, Black Wall Street in Oklahoma. You know, I mean, Oklahoma, Texas, you know, they got some really bad goddamn history when it comes there. Look at what happened after the Jack Johnson fight. They were stabbing and beating and lynching black men all over the fucking country. You know, the draft riots in over the fucking Civil War in New York City. How many black men were lynched in the street by Irish men?
Sure.
Who hadn't even been here like 5 goddamn minutes and decided that they didn't want to have anything to fucking do with this. But on the other hand, you had the fighting, whatever the unit was from New York State. They were mostly Irish. They weren't all Irish, but the fighting Irish. They tore it up in World War I, but they didn't want to share their facilities with black soldiers, you know, with black conscripts from France. You know, I mean, this is a whole lot of goddamn nonsense. And, you know, these white folks that are running around with this fucking flag, and they, you know, it's like, first they tell you that it's heritage and not hate. And then, like the links I sent you earlier, you send them shit, actual quotes from fucking Confederates. The people who designed the goddamn flag, that this is a flag of white supremacy. Then they start calling you a nigger. And when you mention a contradiction, then you hate them, and then they start talking about Jesus and shit, and then fucking Illuminati, and look. We all know this. The United States has lost its goddamn mind. It's an empire in fucking decline and can't deal with it. I mean, same
right,
thing.
Right, and Wesley, and Wesley Park wants to start putting people in camps.
Yeah, I heard that yesterday. I heard you talking about that yesterday. But that's not new either. FEMA has been talking about that kind of shit. But see, but the white supremacists, they're okay if they figure you're just going to round up Indians and black folks and Mexicans. They don't have anything to say about it. But
right.
Once you start looking at them, because of what Dylann Roof did, what James Von Brunn did, what, you know, I mean, name your goddamn Christian terrorist, Zionist terrorist motherfucking United States. I mean, we have an idiot not too long ago doing the Ferguson shit. He was just convicted. I forgot how much time they gave him. But he had a plot. The FBI got him. He had a plot that where he was going to go and damage a couple of police officers with a gun, right? Get away from the scene, find a black man, and super glue the gun to his palm, and basically let him run around so that they're looking for somebody. He can't get the gun off his hand, and then, you know, hoping that he'll, like, you know, start using it to try to defend himself when the cops finally catch up to him, and that he was trying to start a race riot. He was going to glue a gun to the hand of a black man so he could start a race riot. And white people are telling us that we're fucking crazy and paranoid. I mean, the way activists are being, you know,
really?
Black activists.
Really?
Really? Really what?
No,
did that really happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just.
Yeah, that's a real case. It's in my Twitter feed. I mean, you know, anybody can go look for it. It's in my Twitter thing. This was a plot. He was a white guy. Big beard, sandy blonde hair. I mean, he looked stereotypical, you know, poor white guy, right? But that's the thing, though, Bob. These are poor white men. I've known rich white men, and they were bigoted as hell, but they carried it a lot differently, and their racism was caught up in them trying to maintain their lifestyle, their sense of status. You know, I've sat and had discussions with people like this. They're like, I don't really know if I hate black people. I don't know if that's fair for you to say, but I definitely think that, you know, you're not up to our level and this, that, and the other. You know, I mean, he definitely said that. He goes, how could you say I'm a bigot? You're here. You're in my home. You're fucking my daughter. I mean, you know, how could you say that I'm a bigot? Because I'm like, I'm going by the shit that you say, man, you know. But his thing was, well, I'm trying to maintain the type of world that I'm used to having because, you know, he had money. And he's like, you know, and if enough of you come around and don't have the mental acuity or whatever the fuck it is to be able to hang out, then you're going to fuck up my game, and I'm not having that. And then when you talk to these white guys that are poor, you know, when you're sitting next to them in the doctor's office and all that kind of shit, and they get candid with you because there's no fucking buddy else there, and then they're like, wow, this nigga actually knows what the history of the Klan and shit. Oh, well, this, that, and the other. It's like, man, what the fuck you talking about? You don't have anything now. So you just think that if we're out of the picture, it's all going to roll over to you. You know, it's complete nonsense, Bob. It's complete nonsense. It's complete nonsense. And it's so difficult to have a fucking conversation with these individuals because they're not dealing with a full deck.
Yeah, but see, I gotta be real careful about that, Angry, because that's an out. Saying that they're not playing with there's a big difference between saying they're not playing with a full deck and they are grievously undereducated. I will take cards in the grievously undereducated game all night long, but I am not gonna cut them that much slack to say that they're just mentally deficient or crazy.
Because
they manage to live their lives day in and day out with no interference from the state, nobody from the mental health community knocking on their door.
You and I've talked about this before. They're able to function, they have jobs and everything, but I've said this before, and this is how we got into this conversation. You can be functionally crazy. There are people that are highly functioning, crackheads. It catches up to them after a while, but I've known plenty. They kept their jobs. They were able to get up on time and go to work and pay their bills and, you know, all that kind of thing, but they were crack addicts. You know, they didn't look like it because they ate regular meals, but they had regular jobs, and they were able to normalize. This is what I'm talking about. Crazy has been normalized. If you say to somebody that Jesus doesn't exist, you have to defend your statement. They don't have to defend a goddamn thing when there is absolutely no proof. That's a ridiculous state of affairs. You know, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. These people are fucking insane. They want to believe this, but they're allowed to fucking go along with their fucking delusion because we're not allowed to question them. Because if we question them, then somehow we're against all of civilization, and it'll be put like that, and people get emotional, and they're not thinking. You know, Jesus, guns, and Smith & Wesson. I've seen T-shirts like this, you know, here in Portland. Where I live, and you know, and you can't tell them that the Bible and white supremacy isn't connected, and they will twist it. They knowingly twist it. Yeah, there's some of them that really don't get it, and they just follow. You know, there's a lot of 85s out there, but you know, the bottom line is these. There are people who want to believe this stuff because they want to fucking believe it. So I still say that they're goddamn crazy because they're not thinking. They're not thinking. Because if they thought, if science was, you know, I mean, well, not the science, knowing this should be the be all and end all, because scientists too can be goddamn fooled. I mean, how many faith healers and psychics and spoon benders have fooled scientists in laboratory conditions? And then you find out that they were believers. So they weren't doing science. They were going through their own particular filtering of how they see the world. You know, in a lot of ways, I'll say that they're crazy. I don't give a fuck if they got PhDs or not. You have to be crazy to believe in racial supremacy. The supremacy of any particular racial group. That's just mad.
Well, it's see, I opt for stupid on that, but yeah, I'm cranky.
Yeah, but you see it. I mean, you know, the listeners see it. I mean, we all know what the fuck is going on, but we don't want to offend grandma. We don't want to offend, you know, Aunt Sonia, right? We don't want to offend our older brother or our in-laws because, you know, that they are serious Christians and they believe that Barack Obama, because his middle name is Hussein and because he's not
Muslim,
he's a Muslim. And, you know, they are, you know, not
well, see,
going
I'm just,
out
I'm
of
just past that. I won't brook that. I would not brook that if my mother or father were alive, and they're not. And if they were to say something as batshit crazy as he's a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, I wouldn't tolerate it. I wouldn't take it. But again, that's just me. And I can say that because neither of my parents would ever say that. So maybe, you know, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe you just walk out of the room and say, or maybe you just say, this is not a conversation I'm willing to have because I still love you.
Yeah, that's what people do. That's what people do. And see, I've had friends, white friends, say to me, you know, I'm having a disagree with my wife right now. Can I hang out at your place for a while? And then they'll come over and be like, look, man, you know, you and I are cool, right? And it's like, I don't wave a flag that I'm anti-racist, but he's like, my wife, man, I love her to death. But her family, I can't be around them. And I don't want my children around them. But my wife is saying that because, you know, these are the grandparents and we can't, you know, I love them and you can't keep them away from their grandchildren. And he's like, you know, they're over there talking racist bullshit and I'm a Jew. And they're saying things about Jews at their house. And the kids come back and repeat this to me. And he's not religious, you know, but he's like, my children are coming back talking about, you know, when the kikes control the news.
You mean the standard Mel Gibson, the Jews, you're one of those?
Hey, the only reason Fox News doesn't say it is because they know they can't goddamn get away with it. That's the only reason why they don't say it. But what he was
I used to make the argument, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. But you know, back in the heady days of the Dearborn Independent and Henry Ford.
Oh yeah.
It was nothing to pick up that rag or any or just a whole bunch of other publications in this country, or maybe tune in your Philco radio with the tubes and shit in it, and hear somebody inveighing about the Jewish control of the banking, the global bank, blah, 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 blah. And so when I began to see some of the Wall Street stuff. And I'm not giving Wall Street a pass, but and maybe it's just because I'm sensitized to it. It feels like what you just said about Fox, that people are trying to dance around saying, well, you know, the Jewish banking cartels.
And that gives me a real case of the creeps.
It should. Because it's scary. Because, you know, I mean, Jews are very easy to pick on. You know, I mean, Malaysia, for example. I mean, this was more than several years ago. But their president at one point, they had a conference.
Oh, I remember this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mathieu or whatever. I can't remember his name, so I don't want to mispronounce it. But he's an educated goddamn man. And this, he was reading a speech that was given to him. But he still went ahead and read this, and it's like, you know, wait a goddamn minute, man. You believe this bullshit? You know, the protocols of the Elders of Zion type shit? You know, whenever, you know, black men...
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, the protocols of the learned Elders of Zion is still circulating in Arabic countries, and it's taken for gospel.
Yeah, well, it just got to Arabic countries, you know, for the most part.
Oh, no. It's been there for a while.
No. When I say just, I'm talking about, I just wrote about this. Fritz Grober, he was a German spy in the 1930s. He took the protocols out there to Lebanon and Iraq and then Palestine and made sure that they were circulated. No, I know about that. But what I'm saying is, historically speaking, Jews and Muslims have gotten along. This level of Judeophobia that you see in the Muslim world now was brought in there by the European fascists. In the 30s. That's why I'm saying recent.
Oh, yeah, okay. With that definition of recent, yeah, because it was, what, around 1890s or so when it was first crafted, 1890,
in Russia, the Tsarist police.
By the
Tsar, trace it through the Okhrana, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I'm saying, you know, in the whole scheme of things, because they were trying to get the Arabs to fight against the Allies during World War II. Because, you know, they had all those schisms over what happened over World War I and how they got set up the way they did, right? After what happened with Lawrence and St. John Philby and what have you, they got screwed. So they knew that they were already pissed at the British and the French. So they figured, hey, the Germans didn't do anything to you, and you got these Jews over here, because they were Jews living in Palestine before this.
Sure.
Had never left. And they started blaming everything on the Jews that were in Palestine. And you know, they didn't have that type of a relationship. Now, you will hear Zionists who will, you know, pick and, you know, they'll cherry pick the information. They'll say, well, you know, Jews had to pay a fine, basically, a tax. I believe it was called a dimini in Muslim lands. But see, Christians had to do the same thing.
Well, everybody who isn't a Muslim does.
Yeah, but the same thing happened in Christian Europe. I mean, Shakespeare wrote about it. If you were Muslim, you had to pay a tax. If you were Jewish, you had to pay a tax. And there was many occupations that they couldn't even do. And if you were Jewish, you had to live in the Pale. But they don't want to tell the story about that, because when you really start to talk about Judeophobia, you have to talk about the Catholic Church and how they started.
Well, it's kind of like the David Brooks bullshit from last night, where he...
Oh,
you know,
fuck him, too. fuck David Brooks.
Wait,
listening to this who doesn't like him, far right. You can tell him that I said, fuck David Brooks. That bullshit he said about Ta-Nehisi Coates. Well, the bullshit he's been saying in general, and not telling anybody that his fucking son is in the goddamn IDF. Fuck David Brooks.
Well, that line about, you know, my people came from Europe for freedom and to avoid the pogroms. Well, yeah, okay, Dave, good for you.
Good for you.
But it doesn't change the dynamic of what was here before you.
Well, he doesn't give a fuck, and Jews are treated pretty bad by the goddamn Confederates, too, if, and here's the if. There's a line with this, because Jews have a real serious history in the fucking Confederate South. I mean, Judah P. Benjamin was Jewish,
yeah.
And how many different offices did he hold in the Confederacy?
Oh, two or three, didn't he?
Yeah, three of them, right? You know, finance and shit and all that. So, you know... The Jews, like, who did not change their names and kept their name like Moshe, right, you know, or Avner or some shit, who were just, you know, simple landowners, maybe a few of them did own slaves. But when everything came down to it, they cut them out of bullshit, too. You know, those who did not acclimate to the Anglo-Saxon culture that was going on in the South. They did not accept them. Now, the Jews that converted, like Tim Wise, the white anti-racist activist, he's Jewish. But he's like, yeah, my family gave up Judaism a long time ago, and we stopped using those names. Everybody got a Christian name, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, the Spanish, during the
height of the Reconquista, the Converso. Isn't that the Spanish?
The Converso thing, yeah. Change or die, you know. And that led to the Crusades, right? Because after they decided, well, we took Europe back, this part of Europe back, so let's just take every goddamn thing else. Isabella starts paying for the, you know, the trip to the Americas and says, oh, so all of this is ours, including the people. And then, you know, the different countries start fighting over each other. Then the church comes up with two different papal bulls or whatever on how to split it up between the Europeans.
The line of demarcation.
You know, then you got the 1880s with the scramble for Africa. Let's just have a meeting. Why are white men killing other white men? We're all intelligent people. Let's just sit down and have dinner and drink some wine, haul for a few days, and decide how we'll slice Africa up. You know, just like I was saying was done in World War One. You know, you have people who were trying to deal with the Arabs fairly. You know, like I said, I mentioned Lawrence, H.R. Philby, Schwarzkopf's father was over there helping Iran, right?
Here's a name for you, Gertrude Bell.
Gertrude Bell, yeah, one of the first female spies that we know about. Intelligence, the real James Bond. She went out there
and she's the one when they were divvying up the Middle East. She's the one who said, "Oh, this is going to work out nicely."
Nice. Yeah, because she knew. She knew all of the white people who were there.
And when the French ran Faisal out of Syria, because they put him on the Syrian throne first, but the French decided they didn't like him. When they ran him out of Syria, she was instrumental in getting him on the throne of Iraq.
Fun story, isn't it?
God, you know, and that's less than 100 years ago. And it's like ripples from a stone thrown in a pond, only this stone was a brick.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, if people understood how all of this shit started, how things got fucked up, you'll find the individuals who did what they did. Because, like, for example, Sir John Philby, he made it very clear. The people who are undermining what Lawrence and I are trying to do have connections to the energy in the industry. They were pointing this out at the time, that these people had their own interests. They're not looking out for the government. They're not looking out for Britain. And they're looking out for themselves. And we're dealing with exactly the same sort of, you know, mentality, the same sort of attitude. You know, that's why when you look at an Obama, you can look at him and say, yeah, well, his father was African, his mother's white, he's had international experience. This is exactly the type of person we should have up there. Well, when it comes to, you know, photographs of him with his relatives, children, this was an Asian girl because his brother is married to a woman in China. He lives in mainland China. I believe this was their, is probably his niece. You know, he and sister Michelle and the children, they look great when they go out there. You know, he's intelligent, he's articulate, she's intelligent and articulate, she can do push-ups, that's all great. She can dance, I love all of this. But when it comes to brass tacks, he is a black man who was up there to not look out for black people. He made it very clear when he was running and in 2008, I am not a black president. I'm an American president. I'm not doing anything special for black people. He said that. I don't remember the exact quote, but he said that. The black press got on him about that. Then he told us to put on slippers, you know, backing up what Bill Cosby was saying with the pound cake speech. And it's the same thing with Bill Cosby. The black community, for the most part, is turning on him because he's an embarrassment. He's an embarrassment. Not that they really are angry with what the fuck he did, which is something else that pisses me off. They're more upset with the fact that he's a fucking embarrassment. This is somebody that was pushing Reaganomics in the black community, who was telling his son to never go against the grain, to be as white as possible, but keep your little, you know, black temple university identity. But fuck your brothers and sisters out here in the street.
So that little word that I coined, is that workable for, like, Stephen Smith this evening? Was he Cosby-splaining?
Yeah, that works. Yeah, that works, because he's from the same class. You know, I'm trying to figure out, because there's so many running through my head right now, that they're tripping over each other. I don't know which one to name first. You pick any which one you want to. They're all over the place. What do you think Oprah Winfrey's about?
See, I got a question here from Ron in Raleigh you might like to take on. Under the subject line, two names we haven't heard in a while, Ron asks, "Hey, Bob, how much money does it take to make you think you're white?"
How much do Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams make?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. But see, Thomas Sowell and, you know, Walter E. Williams, all of these cats, most of them, Alan West too. I just said this on my own show the other day. You know, they are intelligent black men. Stanley Krauss, they're intelligent black men. You know, it's really difficult to really say that they're not smart men. And what it is, and, you know, a lot of people don't like to talk about this because it's dirty motherfucking laundry, but we need to start exposing this motherfucking issue. They're black cats, man, who are like me, all right? Go, you know, go to school where the fuck you were, and, you know, you see more to what the fuck is going on. You read, you understand, you look at different shit, you realize that being in the fucking ghetto, this being a black guy, this big, you know, there's more to this shit. And, you know, motherfuckers pick on you. And they laugh at you for, you know, reading books during lunch. Or they laugh at you for shining your shoes and bullshit. I'm saying because I experienced this. And you go through a fucking thing where you hate other goddamn black people. You don't want anything to do with other fucking black people. Self-hating black men and women exist. The self-hating Jew exists, right? You got people that don't want to have anything to do with what happened in the Holocaust and further back in history. They feel that Jews are weak and they don't want any association with it. I've known two neo-Nazis that were fucking Jewish that had that same trip going on. This is why I'm saying, man, you know, Uncle Toms and motherfuckers who are, you know, biracial and shit, who have had to deal with this, really need to fucking be more vocal about the bullshit that we've gone through.
And see, there's a parallel to this. Take, for instance, a lower middle class couple, or I don't know, ordinary white folks, say, living in Kansas. By the way, we had a note from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, who said, simply a short note, Bob, to say that it's a good night when you and Angry have a long conversation. You are appreciated, my friend. But let's assume a white couple, their grandparents have some small children, their children are out there. And, you know, he's been working 25 years, she's been working 25, 30 years, and suddenly they hit a $10 million lottery jackpot. Now, I'm using this as an example because this very thing happened a month or so ago. You know, not big news, but it just happened. And they won $10 million bucks. And it doesn't have a sad ending where, you know, they gas themselves or anything because they can't stand the wealth. No, both of them said, well, we're going to keep on, wrong accent, I know. We're just going to keep on working. We'll keep working our same jobs. And we're going to buy a new, you know, they got $10 million in their pockets, and they say, we're going to buy a new lawnmower and maybe a new pickup truck. And, okay, but the thing is, in conjunction with Ron's question of how much money does it take to make you think you're white, so this couple has $10 million to play with. They're not suddenly going to get on the Jamie Dimon Christmas list, are they?
Well, they could if they wanted to.
When you
have money, you can make a decision, you know?
Yeah, and that's the question. You know, what is there a differentiation between wealth impact in the black community versus wealth impact among white folks?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Does that couple in Kansas suddenly think that they're going to be out there hobnobbing on the yacht with the Gottrocks family?
It doesn't sound like it.
No. No, and that's my point. What I'm trying to get to is that there's a social component to it, too.
Of course.
Maybe if they manage their money wisely, their grandchildren might be hobnobbing. Maybe one of their grandkids can become a hedge fund manager and marry the son or daughter of Malia Obama. You see what I'm getting at?
It
takes more than just money. It takes admission into a sort of prestige zone.
Well, we're talking about Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby is a black man, okay? He is a black man. He is an actor. He is an actor. He is a black man. But because his politics have always been conservative, There was a film clip that you can find if you look around for it when he used to have the Mr. Kincaid show. Remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Right?
When he was on the set smoking a cigar, and he said, you know, I don't want another country. He was basically criticizing the Soviet Union. I don't want another country telling us what to do about racism. We'll handle it here. We're Americans, and we'll deal with it. He has always been deferential to white power. And he has always been deferential to white privilege. He and Oprah belong to a class that the only time they complain about fucking racism is when they or somebody in their fucking economic class level or social shit, because we have both, all right, gets offended. When she couldn't buy a purse in Switzerland and the way she was treated, all of a sudden racism mattered.
Yeah. Wait, are you there? Hang on. How did I do that? I got you, but somehow or another, I had another call coming in angry, and I took it, and it accidentally muted the speakers. This must be a new bug in Skype. Hang on. Well, this just beats all. I'm going to hang up here, and hopefully we'll get angry back. Let me send him a message. Well, it'll only take a minute or so. thank you, Marty. Marty pointing out, remember, somehow Microsoft bought, acquired Skype. That's no longer a bug. It's now a feature. And Randy's apparently experienced it, too. Sometimes Windows resets the mute checkbox in the sound control panel. I don't know why. I'll be damned, Randy, you were right. Marty and Randy are both right. It spontaneously muted. Well, we should be fixed in a minute. All right, do I have you back angry?
Yeah.
That was about screwed up. I had another call coming in, and I had to reject it, and for some reason or another, Skype just decided to mute the damn speakers, and I had to go find that. Thanks to Randy and Marty, I was able to sort it out. What a mess! But, you were talking about Oprah and the purse.
Well, yeah, I mean, she had her experience, and the salesperson treated her really rudely and basically told her, you're black, and I didn't figure that you had the money for that very expensive purse. I mean, at least the woman was honest about it.
That reminds me of the Condoleezza Rice incident. You remember this one?
No.
I think it was at Needless Markup. No. I want to say that it was at the same time that she went shoe shopping in New York. But she went to a jewelry counter and asked to see some stuff, and the saleswoman began laying out, and she said, don't show me that cheap shit. Don't you know who I am? Condoleezza Rice!
This is the same woman who was buying shoes and seeing Spam-a-Lot while black people were drowning in Katrina.
Bingo.
Yeah, that's what it was. Went shoe shopping during Katrina. The same woman who referred to George Bush as my husband, or I mean the president.
Look, we know about Bean. The woman that she's been living with for more than 20 years, they own a house together. You know, it's her life. She can do what the fuck she wants to do.
Yeah.
They got on Janet Reno for the same goddamn thing, you know. Not one thing has anything to do with whatever. But the fact is, you're a black person, you have power, and you do nothing to straighten shit out. Colin Powell, same fucking thing. When he started speaking a little black, the Republican Party turned their back on him. You hear anybody talking about Colin Powell today?
Is he still on the planet?
I mean, he's still out there, but nobody's speaking to him. Nobody wants to talk to him. He started talking about racism, and he started talking about racism against Obama. All of a sudden, all those people who were talking crapola about, oh, we need to
Colin
Powell.
Yeah, and he also kind of dropped the dime on George.
Well, that's everybody has at one point or another, because we all know that George is a fucking jerk, you know.
Well, he's a war criminal.
Yeah, well, amongst other things.
Like I said at the beginning of the program, there's some more of your self-radicalized terrorists.
Okay, now there's something we can talk about. I'm looking at my Twitter feed here. You had this black man who was a Confederate flag supporter who died in a car accident.
Saw that. What the hell was that?
Well, you know, I at first I didn't even believe it, you know, because it was just hard to believe. And they're still not really they're still being cagey with what the hell is going on. But the woman who was in this car is another black Confederate flag supporter. And the two of them, she claims that she didn't know this man, but she let him drive her car. This is her story. And that they were leaving this Confederate flag rally, and somewhere out of town, because they don't know exactly where this car came from, this is what she says. She starts tweeting or posting to Facebook or whatever, they're after us. That supposedly these guys pull up. At first the news didn't say that they were black. Now supposedly that they were black. But before they said anything about them being black, the right-wing trolls on Twitter were running around accusing the new Black Panther Party for this shit when there is no such motherfucking thing. But what I want to get to now is the psychology. We're talking about, you know, all black lives matter. These guys now, the same ones who were talking about, you know, basically we don't give a fuck about black people, y'all are all niggas, now they're tweeting Black Lives Matter, talking about we don't care about this black guy who was killed by these black radicals, totally ignoring Dylann Roof, totally ignoring the fuck that the Klan is down there, totally ignoring that it's been totally outed on progressive media, on exactly, and mainstream media, exactly what the Confederate flag fucking stands for. Only Fox won't discuss this. And they're trying to flip the script now and get everything even more fucking confused. See, this is the irrationality I was talking about in terms of crazy. You're calling this shit a human rights issue. They're calling this a civil rights issue now. And now they're trying to make it out that, you know, we as black people need to be supporting them because this guy had the right of free speech, and he had a right to have his opinions known, and this, that, and the other, while they're out here doing everything possible to demean and harm black activists all day long, who call them out for being exactly what they are, neo-Nazis, who don't have the balls to say it. You know, you got Harold Covington from up here in the Pacific Northwest. He's out here saying that Dylann Roof did the right thing and that there's more to come. You know, on my recent show, Alan Combs had somebody on from the League of the South, not too far from where you are, Brother Bob, talking about the Lincoln assassination was overdue.
Oh God! Well, I was doing my prep for today, and I was trying really hard to stay away from all the Confederate horseshit, because now and I can never sort it out, Angry. I can never sort it out between, is this a whole bunch of stuff that's just sort of organically happening, or is it because the media aggregators are suddenly interested in this topic?
Which topic in particular?
Well, I mean, there's just all kinds of Confederate racism out there. Confederate-related racist, you know, crap.
Well, it's always been out there. They're just paying attention to it now happened.
Right. And I don't, you know, you want to, on the one hand, you want to report it, but on the other, you don't want to, I mean, there's a little bit of editorial choice that goes on in putting this program together. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, sure. But see, Trump is doing more for this type of thing than they are. You know, the fact that, okay, well, ask yourself this. Everybody should be asking this. Why is Trump saying the types of things that he's saying? And he's the number one front runner, there for the GOP. MediaMatters.org says that the mainstream media isn't even looking at the other fucking clowns in this parade. They're looking at Trump. And Trump isn't about any goddamn thing. He has no fiscal fucking plan. He has no foreign policy. He has no policy to rebuild the fucking infrastructure. We're talking about somebody that built his entire fucking empire on junk bonds.
Oh, Donald Trump, it's a rare day that I find myself in the position of needing to defend Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, he's been.
But son of a gun, if Donald Trump didn't dox him today. He gave out Lindsey Graham's personal cell phone number.
Yeah, I saw that. And again, that is what the right wing does. If they can't fucking beat you on facts, because they have none, the facts go against them, they will find another way to get you. So he doesn't like Lindsey Graham cracker. A lot of people don't, you know, care for his politics. But all of a sudden now, you're going to go after your GOP brother?
Well, Trump never heard the Reagan's 11th commandment.
Oh, he don't give a fuck, man. You know, the Bible is just something for him to stand on while he's urinating on the rest of us and shit, on the pause. He doesn't give a fuck. But Lindsey Graham cracker is easy to attack. Because Lindsey Graham cracker wants to go up there with his sister as the first lady. So he's easy to attack. In the GOP field full of bigots, anybody that will, you know, comes across any way that way, except for Mitch McConnell, only because he serves a purpose, they will, you know, come after. Where as soon as this thing starts to narrow down, Piyush Jindal will be called an Indian American. Christie might start start calling him an Italian American if they keep pushing.
Are you saying that a little bit of white might start slipping away?
Hey man, a guy I know, he used to be a trader on Wall Street. He's totally retired now, and he retired out here with his third wife. Smokes cigars all the time. We chit chat, and he was asking me if I had heard the chatter on Facebook, and I said I'm not on Facebook. And he goes, it's pretty funny because people in the financial stuff, they're asking if the Greeks are actually white. Because they seem kind of Semitic, you know, because they're failing now. They're not really part of Europe. Aren't they closer to Turkey and Cyprus? And they're not part of
Europe. Well, and that's the thing. That's a crossroads, and there has been a lot of genetic, and I won't use the word race, but there's been a lot of genetic intermingling there. The same thing goes for the Italian peninsula. As far back as the days of Julius Caesar, the well-to-do looked down their nose at Pompey and said, "Well, you know, he's got that Gallic look, and his Greek, he has no Greek." But there was bigotry against him for looking, and to look Gallic was to have reddish blonde hair, and blue eyes.
But the cows are dying, so you got to blame it on somebody. You don't blame it on the people that look like you.
Right.
You know, that's the whole thing with the white supremacists. At first they say the black people didn't do anything. We've just been sitting around on our asses.
Go back to the Middle Ages and the sources of some of the pogroms. Of course, they weren't pogroms then, because, I mean, it's kind of a Russian word, isn't it? During the plague, what was the argument? Well, the Jews are poisoning the wells.
Stealing children.
Yeah, well, that was the blood libel. The Jews were poisoning the wells, when in fact it was that the Christians were largely a lot filthier than the Jewish families were. So the Jewish families were less likely to be plague-ridden.
Yeah,
I mean the same thing happened to the Pope at Avignon. Avignon was a shithole, but he stayed the hell away, and a lot of people kept the room clean. Hence, no rats, no fleas, no plague.
Yeah, but the main point was they were different. They were not me. They were different.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
They were different. So
and we, you know, we've had this wide ranging conversation, and it seems damn near criminal that somehow or another, neither you nor I have brought up the fact that the dash cam footage is now out.
For Sandra Bland?
For Sandra Bland, with the cops saying, I will light you up!
Oh, yeah. And she told them that she has epilepsy.
And they told her, you know, the guy walks up to her, she's in her own car, and put your cigarette out. I'm in my own car. Why? And that's what gets her dragged out and tased. And gets her head slammed into the pavement. All on, you know, a specious, you know, what was it? Tail light? Failure to signal, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. But supposedly she was trying to get out of his way. So that they targeted her. It started to look more important that they knew that she was an actor.
And then she just conveniently commits suicide with a plastic bag?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Three women in a week. That other woman, she was white. Let me see. You had Sandra Bland, Kendra Chapman, and I don't think they released the name, even though I've seen a photograph of this woman, because I've used it in one of my blog posts. You know, women, you know, not going home, getting arrested for minor things and not coming home, and they're just like, well, they committed suicide. Nothing to see here. Move on. I'm going to assume that this white woman was poor, so nobody gives a fuck. You got thousands of women missing on the Canadian-U.S. border. Nobody cares in the United States, and no fucking buddy cares in Canada. Harper doesn't give a fuck. You got Mexican women, Spanish-speaking Indian women, missing on the Mexican-U.S. Fucking border. Thousands of them. Nobody gives a fuck in the U.S., and nobody gives a fuck in Mexico either. So it doesn't surprise me in Texas that a black woman can get fucked up. You just had Sergeant James, I can't remember his name, but he was a black sergeant, active duty. He goes in for a DUI for 2 days. They're supposed to keep him over the weekend.
And comes out
dead. They tell him when he ends up dead. When he gets there, they tell him, we're going to hold you for 7 days. So he tries to get bailed out from whatever the fuck the extension was that they just threw on him. And somehow he winds up dead. They said he died for natural causes, and now we now know from the film that's been released, they murdered him.
Mm-hmm.
They murdered him. Okay,
because we're out of time, we loop this all back around. And you know what? When the activists say Black Lives Matter, the only real appropriate answer, and Stephen Smith can stuff it up his ass, the only real answer is, yes, they do. Why is that so damn difficult, Angry?
It's difficult because if you admit that Black Lives Matter, then you have to admit why we're saying that Black Lives Matter, why it even has to be a fucking discussion that Black Lives Matter, because the fact is, we don't. Our lives don't matter, because if they did, the president would get a hell of a lot more respect. The average black person who's fucking trying to do right would get respect. You got men like this sergeant that we just talked about in Texas who served in goddamn uniform, was active duty, and the military is not standing up for him. That's why we're talking about Black Lives Don't Matter. And if you can support this show, help Bob stay on the air. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. We got to get out of here. It is top of the hour and a little bit more. We will begin the program for prayer meeting Wednesday, needing a miracle, because the fundraising goal will at that point in time be $400, because we were at exactly zero this evening. It really is time to get out of here. Thanks for all of your kind attention. Thanks for your participation. And thank you for sharing your precious, finite, irretrievable time in participating in this community. And always, of course, always, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.